Thank you. Councillor Laws, how do you propose to go from being the organisation's biggest critic to leading into the change it needs? And basically what I'm asking here is, how do you transition from criticising staff and councillors to empowering them?
Well, I think that's pretty simple. I think the electors provided that choice. Alexa, I think that the electors have voted for change around the governance table. I think, can I just pick out what Gretchen said at the end, because she referred to something that the six new councillors won't know, and that was that I thought that the council staff over the last year have started to move in the right direction in a big way. And I made that comment at the last council meeting, that I thought that in terms of picking up where we're going, particularly on water quality, for example, using science-based as the stasis for policy, or as the aegis for policy, was now being picked up. And I praised, in actual fact, the senior management for picking that up over the last 6 to 12 months. I'm not sure where they're yet, and I think that's where it comes in, Alexa. I think that we've got to prove to the election, to the region at large, that we're going to do things a different way by putting, frankly, different faces in those roles. And one of the best ways of doing that, to show that we're changed and in changing, frankly, is to change those leadership faces. It would be, of course, my job to develop the organisation, but we've still got some problems we've got to fix, and I think we've got to be honest about it. And I think we've lacked honesty over the last 3 years, Alexa. I think we've been dishonest with ourselves, and we haven't really informed the community at large about the gaps that exist in the way in which we lead. So what I would promise is honesty. I promise communication. But also, you're right by me, and so's 11 or 10 other councillors. We're doing this together. And that's the key difference. We're doing this together. Over the last 3 years, we've had one person or two be the public face of this council. I intend that there are 12 public faces of this council.
Thank you, Michael. Councillor Hobbs, how do you propose? You've outlined a vision. You're the only person that is represents true, real change to me, which is why I nominated you. But how do you propose to use your government connections, the government we have now, to help ORC become a shining star in regeneration that is envisaged in the NPS and hopefully our own visions, the NPS freshwater management specifically?
Well, let's put it very clear. David Parker and I don't always agree on things. He thinks I spent far too much money on Lake Taupo nitrate scheme. But I do have access. And can I say it's not just because I'm a member of the Labour Party, but because I can actually... I've never been afraid. I wasn't afraid in London either of picking up the phone and saying, there's a conflict down here about what you mean by X. Would you mind spelling it out for me, what it is that you mean by X? That is where I use things. And by the way, I would use that if it was the National Party in government either, or the Greens. I'm just thinking out loud. It is just that ability. I've never been afraid. Okay, so I'd pick up the phone and have a conversation, and I'd also, which is what I also tend to do on other matters that I work with the current government, is saying, actually, down here at the moment, they're feeling really fractious about this issue. Do you think you need to take a look? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it's me. No. Sorry. I was thinking about the answer.
Thank you.
No, I have no questions. I kind of feel inappropriate for me to question. Thank you.
That's the hope. I just have one for you, Councillor Hobbs, and I do apologise for saying this, but I have to know this. You have the Labour in your corner.
Yeah.
We have farmers in this region that are getting hammered. Now, if you become my chair, how are you going to walk the line, and what are you going to say to these farmers? Because they're angry, and it's not just farmers. There's viticulturists, there's other people. this area, and everybody has got or going to have some major, major problems going on. Now, you need, I just want to know from you, what would you say? Obviously, you said you could pick up the phone and talk to Minister Park and say, hey, we've got a problem here.
Yeah.
Can you just tease it out a little bit more?
It's more about, it is actually about having clarity about what is being said by government in a document or whatever. So that's the first thing, actually to check what people are reading and what they think is being said. Unfortunately, I have a long memory, and as Minister, many of those same farmers, in fact, I met them at a Wanaka meeting, I recognised them as the same people who told me that they were environmentally wonderful years ago. And I know that they've changed since then, and they've made improvements, but if they thought they were good then, do you see what I mean? I come from a situation of, don't just say it, show me it. And if you're showing me it, that it is possible to achieve clean rivers or land use that is good for the soil or whatever, then I'm with you and I'm supportive of you. But just by shouting it from the rooftops and getting in a lather about it is not going to work. I want to actually see it on the ground and work with them. And I will work with a farmer as much as I will work with the owner of a flat in South Dunedin facing flooding.
And you think, for example, in the farming community, that the catchment groups will be the trump card?
Yeah, I like the catchment groups. I went to the water meeting down here run by MFE when they came in, and the guy from Pōmahaka, who I think stood, didn't he?
Lord, yes.
Yeah. I was incredibly impressed with what I saw and heard there. I thought that was wonderful.
Careful.
And that's what... sorry.
No.
Sorry. Yeah.
So, and again, it was from, having said that, it is only from what I learned at that meeting, if I'd have to go deep into it.
Sure.
But what I learned there, I saw that was real progress. And I mean, what happened on the western side of Lake Taupo, when faced with eutrophication in the lake, to do that nitrate exchange, we had to get some farmers to limit the number of animals they had in order to allow tūwharetua to grow. Now, I was part of that. That's recognised by the OECD as the best nitrate exchange in the world. I'm extraordinarily proud of it. That was working with farmers.
Yes, and obviously okay. Talking and building the communities and building
our
trust.
You bet. And so I'll be there, and I can ride a bike. Not on the electric one. No, not a motorbike. Well, actually, I have. I've got an old license. Sorry.
Thank you. That's my only question. Councillor Callaghan.
Thank you all for your very frank and honest profiles to us. Firstly, Gretchen, I'm in a difficult position because through my election campaign, as with the others, I can't speak for them. We were asked to state publicly how would we fix the situation that the ORC finds itself in. And one of the biggest concerns was around the lead of the organisation. And obviously, you've been here for a long time, deputy chair, and working with the chair. And of course, we were forced to. Well, I publicly was forced to say, well, I actually do honestly believe there needs to be a change in chair and deputy chair. What you've said that you would do and propose is very different to the way the ORC has operated. I mean, to want to engage with catchment members or leaders is something that they have banged their heads against a brick wall for an awful long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be many out there, I'm sure, who will be saying this is a massive change.
Mm-hmm.
Are you true to your word? That is what you genuinely want to do.
It's genuinely what I want to do. That's why after 2 years as a water quality scientist, I quit doing that because I was so frustrated with not being able to work to make a real difference and worked instead in integrated catchment management. It's what I truly believe is the way that we're going to get change. I, as I've said, have found it very, very frustrating, and I think you know that. Councillor Callaghan, in not being able to make traction in supporting catchment groups, particularly in a meaningful way, but also respecting the leadership that is in the community already. So Recently, I did meet with some of these catchment leaders who again said, you know, come on, we actually want to have an urban-rural discussion going on. And I said, yes, wouldn't that be fantastic? I would love to say yes, I would love that to happen. And I said to them, if I'm elected, I'm going to do all I can to see that happen. Regardless of being chair, regardless of anything, I'm going to keep pushing for that because it's what I truly believe in. So thank you for the question.
Thank you. One other question to you was just around we are under serious pressure from central government at the moment and quite specifically directed into certain areas.
Yeah.
Where do you sit if you were elected into the chair around putting Otago first versus following the line of central government?
Yes. I have been saying this as well, that I think we need to get our ducks lined up in terms of overarching philosophies for Otago. What's the vision? What are we actually aiming at? And let's work together as Otago. We're going to have so much strength in working together, and we're going to literally fall apart through anxiety and well-being issues if we don't. So, this is quite hard to say, but I do support a lot of what's coming from central government in terms of ethos. However, I totally support that Otago needs to build what's important to it first as the core, and support people through that. Mm-hmm.
Can I answer that question too, please, Gary? Is that possible?
No, not unless it's put to you.
Oh, okay.
We can answer it when I get to you.
Sure, thank you.
Question for you, Marriott, please. Just to expand on the questions from Carmen.
Yeah.
You have polled exceptionally well in Dunedin under the Labor ticket. So does that mean that you come to this table with Labor policy, Labor principles in the forefront of your position here?
Labour principles are certainly at the forefront. I mean, the principles about fairness, about justice, those sorts of issues, I'm born with them. They're not Labour, they're mine. Labour just happens to agree with me. But policies, just as when in Cabinet, they are there to be argued. And I have always argued in environment, even as Minister, that our environment is not the same. Kerikeri is very different from Pōmahaka, and certainly different from the Manuhirikia. So you must therefore actually work catchment by catchment. And that's science, and that's understanding, and that's a community. But if a person just asserts to me blandly, as happened to me in a meeting yesterday, this government has cost me this amount of money and makes nothing else and doesn't tell me anything else, I'm not going to roll over. I'm going to ask questions and bury down. So that's where the difference will be, probably, because I will want to know, don't just blame the government, explain to me why, in words of one syllable, that I get. Okay? And if they can, and if they can have others with them, you bet I'll listen and I'll engage and we will try and find a solution. But I want to say one thing to you. When you say that it was Labour Party that put me in, and yes, I did poll well, the person who also ran on the Labour ticket didn't have the same polling. Okay, so it's not necessarily Labour Party that got me in. It was actually also about knowing a little bit about the topic that I'm standing for and coming from that background. So, and I think a wee bit of who I am, because I'm not a pussy. Okay?
Okay, thank you. Councillor Laws, same question as Michael.
It's a really, really good question.
Also, one other question to you. Do you want to answer that one first?
Or? Sure, can I answer that? Because I think it's a really good question. You know, for the last 3 years, and again for the councillors who weren't here, but the councillors who will know, I've long argued that we need to engage in the political process and that we haven't been. So Michael and Brian and Gretchen will know that, and so will Andrew. And that is that when something doesn't go right here, go to the people who are in Wellington who are implementing it and say, excuse me, we don't think you've got this right here.
Mm.
and we need a bit of extra assistance, or we need you to be aware. And I don't think we did that role very well over the last 3 years. I used to move motions, as Michael will know, all the time, saying, can we just write to the minister and let them know what we're saying, because otherwise no one's ever going to know. I don't want us to be in a position for the National Policy Standard on Freshwater Management to have the Ministry for the Environment, which is what's going to happen, dictating what's going to occur. So the government's setting it, but the bureaucrats are defining it. And the truth is, we're then required to interpret it locally. And Marion's right, and so are you. It's got to be catchment by catchment, obviously. But there will be times when those guidelines from Wellington, and particularly their interpretation by the Ministry for the Environment, are just wrong. And we've got to be able to say they're wrong. And this is the reason that they're wrong. We're not going to say it's going to cost us money. We're just going to say these are the implications, environmentally, economically, socially, if you persist with that particular ideology. Second, can I also just say this? And Marion, I'm saying, please, don't. There's no criticism at all. And you're absolutely right, by the way, about your vote. It was nothing to do with Labour. It was to do with Marion Hobbs. Sorry, I'm just answering the question to do with the flowing on
please
question.
Just ask,
no, it's the same question, though. It's the same question. If there's a change in government next year, and I want to flag this with every one of you around the table, and it only requires New Zealand First not to get 5%, and I'll tell you what, that's a real risk from their point of view, because we know how badly third parties do in government, then there will be a change in government, and on current polling, it would not be a Labour-Greens government. So we need to be always in a position, and this is something I want to flag with you right now, and that is we need to be engaging with all political parties now. And that includes National New Zealand First Act, so that we are constantly keeping them informed, anticipating that there may happen. Sorry.
Yeah, and my second question was just around possibly almost a more personal question, but it was around... certainly have clear messages from out in our regions that not enough of the chair and deputy chair have been seen in some of the critical meetings. I have heard some criticism in the past that you have not been at some meetings where people have hoped that you might have been. And I suppose given the difference in role from the chairman's position, are you saying to us that that becomes a full-time role for yourself? You've got a young family...
Yeah, something I discussed last night. I had not intended to stand, as you know, but I was not convinced that we would get the change that we required. And I'd be honest with you, my preferred nominee has chosen not to stand for this position. So, for that reason, I did discuss it with my family last night, and we would have to make some adjustments, but that was agreed. I just think the next 3 years are so critical that the leadership of this organisation is critical too. But can I say something here? Whatever decision we make today, 12 of us have got to walk out of that room on the same side.
Thank you all for your questions, for your answers.
Right. I'm just mindful it's 12 o'clock. We've been sitting now for a couple of hours and we have family... here as well. So I think it's probably a good point to break. Lunch is ready. I know that that's kind of unusual in the middle of this process, but I don't think that we're going to be able to get through all of this procedure without having a break. So I propose that we do that now.
For very long.
I would like us to do that for half an hour.
Sorry, Snide, why can't we go to the vote now? I mean, unless, or, and just wrap this up. I mean, then we could be all finished in a quarter of an hour, or half an hour, and then we could...
Oh, I've got questions.
Sorry. I didn't realise you still had questions. My apologies. Sorry.
We have agreed
sorry.
To a process.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm just asking.
Are you suggesting an adjournment, are you?
Oh, It's a lunch break. Just, the
sounds
agenda.
Like adjournment to me.
I know we're being fair, but does everybody on this side of the table, I'm not saying that we've hogged your time and we apologise for that, but does everybody wish to speak?
I've just got a couple of questions.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be the other thing.
Chair, I'd be certainly comfortable to break now to reflect on what's been said and then have my question straight after a break, because I think our headspaces would that would do us good. And we've got family here waiting to talk to newly sworn in councillors.
That's right.
So.
Yeah. Cake's way at 1:30. How about we have a quarter of an hour lunch?
20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. My expectation is that I don't need to call you, that you'll be back here at 20 past.
Yep.
Okay? Let's carry on. We are under some time pressure, so I'm just mindful of that. So we'll now, had you completed your questions, Councillor Callaghan? You had, hadn't you? All right, so Councillor Laws, you have an opportunity to ask questions.
No, sorry,
questions.
I didn't have any questions to ask.
Thank you. Councillor Malcolm.
In the fullness of time and having my questions satisfied, I just wonder, Chair, if we could move to the voting stage, if that would be appropriate. So I have no questions.
We have talked about the process that we're going to take. There are others who wish to speak to their nominations. So I think we have to stick with that, unless there's an appetite for doing something differently. But my sense is that people still want to speak themselves to their nominations. And the second is also. So, all right. So did you have
thank
any
you.
Questions?
No, that's okay. No,
okay.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Councillor Noon.
Okay, so I've got two questions. One is for the three, and then I've got one for Councillor Laws that I'll finish up with. So my question is around, we've just taken the oath, and it's talked about abiding by local government plus whatever act that's appropriate or whatever. So Local Government Act 2002 talks about the four wellbeings. The RMA also talks about the four wellbeings. Some of the challenges that we have going forward, and particularly in the water space, the MPS FM, the latest iteration where we're heading, talks a lot about the environment having basically supersedes those other well-beings in terms of priority. So a question for each of you, how do you see that you would manage that politically and in the policy decision-making process? So I assume we start with Councillor Roberts and Hobbs and Laws.
Okay. I think I understand where you're coming from, but yeah, you wanted to know how we're going to manage that politically. So essentially, if it's clarified that environment's the bottom line and then people can do what people do after that, first of all, I support that concept. We can't be well without looking after our environment. So, yep. Second of all, though, I think our communities are there as well. It's just we need some conversation going, and I think that's what I talked about before, with it urban and rural getting together and starting the conversation. We share values. When we do that, we find that actually often collectively we have the same core values. When we go off into our separate camps, we sometimes have our individual traits, which are a bit more self-centred, and this is my scenario, and I must protect it. But when we come together, we can get collective values coming forward, and I think that's where 6A got to before. We actually, you know, for all its the good things about it were that we managed to get everyone to agree to standards that were stricter than the national guidelines, because that's what Otago wanted. So, yeah, I think that's my answer. When we work collectively, I think that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, Tony. I was aware, I was thinking about the... Okay, your four well-beings... I think we need to be aware the RMA is under review, and one of the reasons it's under review has been the input of economics that was put in there in the second review of the RMA some years ago. And there was, and that caused a it caused the problem that we're kind of facing now, where people said, look, the environment's not important. If we do this, people are going to lose money, or we won't be able to export quite so much. So putting in the environment in there as more important under the RMA than some other things is not saying that it is environment alone. Okay, you can't put in the environment and take everyone out of South Dunedin without working out how the hell you're going to do that and with them.
Yep.
So it's a question of balancing the well-beings. But I do accept, in the kind of time of crisis that we're living now environmentally, that the environment has assumed more importance. That's why I stood.
I was delighted when they put the four well-beings back into the Local Government Act, I have to say. But I also know that as Mayor, when they took it out, we ignored it anyhow and did what we were going to do. So the reality is, you know, you're always still going to look after the community, cultural and social, as well as the economic environment as well. I guess my answer to that, Andrew, is, listen, one of the great things that's come out of this discussion amongst all 12 of us is that we've got to do things the Otago way. And then we've got to do things within each of those catchments that suits as well. And I think there's enough wisdom around here to be able to achieve that. I also think we can't be bound by legislation. One of the things that I always used to say, again, as Mayor, was, for Pete's sake, we should work out what we want to do first and then work out the process we're going to handle it second. I think there's a great tendency to go, oh, we're not going to do that because the law says we can't. Often the law is actually quite ambivalent over it. It just requires you to find a process in which to make that work. Sorry, you had another question for me.
Yeah, and I should say that this question should also be posed to Councillor Robertson, because during our previous triennium, there were times when we were confronted with non-public information, and we weren't that good at being able to keep, from time to time, I'm not blaming anyone, but it happened, and we weren't that good at being perhaps trustworthy, is the correct word, and I just wondered, for both of you, how would you deal with situations like that if they unfolded during this triennium, for example?
Can I answer that one first, or do you want to go first, Richard?
You're welcome to answer.
Okay,
it, yeah.
I've currently got a complaint in front of the Office of the Ombudsman as to how this particular governance procedure conducts itself around confidential information. Can I tell new councillors that we went into workshop far too often, in my view, over the last 3 years, and hid stuff from the public that I did not stand to be hidden from? My complaint is about a particular consents review that was commissioned by ourselves in open session and then was dealt with confidentially, and we went into confidence, frankly, not telling the truth about why. And that's the basis of my complaint, and that's currently the result of that investigation. Andrew, you invite...
I'll be keen to focus on the question.
No, I am. I am giving you that specific, because if you keep stuff in secret that should be in public, you invite from all interested parties who may have a view that should be shared publicly. And if it's commercially confidential, different matter. If it involves staff, gosh. But I proceed from the basis that you won't have a problem, Andrew, if we start meeting much more in open session and stuff that we're doing in workshops is minuted and open to the public as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. In one way, I think I agree with Councillor Laws. The first thing to do is answer the question of should it be in private or should it be in public session, and really have the right reason for why it would be in private. And that has to be a really, really, really good reason for that to happen. And we all move that, and we all agree, and then it becomes a council decision. And if you've lost that decision, well, actually, legally, it is moving into a closed session, so you must abide by the council's decision to do that and standing orders. So if you choose not to do that, I think we would have to then look at what needs to happen as a result. And I have no idea how things got out in the past. It might have been from around this table. It could have been from anywhere. There's, you know, we have printed material in the organisation. Who knows? I don't know how it got out. It just did. But if we find that it's still happening, we would need to investigate it because it's very unhealthy, I think, for an organisation. But the essence of the question is, why is it in private? There should be very, very few instances where that is appropriate, but there are appropriate ones. I think this is going great. Yeah, we were going to have this in adjourned session. I'm really enjoying this. This is awesome. Transparency, lots of great questions. Let's do more of this. Agree. Yeah, workshops and where information can be shared with public, where it's public information. Great. Yep.
Thank you.
Hey, Councillor Robertson.
Oh, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Councillor
Scott.
Okay. Through the election period, I made it quite clear that my number one goal is to achieve good, sustainable water quality and flow throughout Otago Waterway. So I ask the three candidates, and some have already talked around this to some degree, but this next term, what are you going to do to achieve that outcome, to achieve good water quality and flow throughout Otago? You know, what do you undertake to do?
Okay, well, and you've set up FMUs. I think they're called FMUs.
Yep.
And then inside those are catchments. I think that that work, and I'm saying this from a basis of not all that much knowledge of where the hell you're up to, but what I want is identified which are the areas that are most... because Otago is not as bad as Canterbury, which are the areas where there is most water damage, okay? Water damage, that's not the right word. The rivers are damaged. And I want that those catchments is where the focus of the work has to start. We haven't got staff to do the whole lot at once, so we have to start, but we have to move at speed. So if that means employing more staff, you bet, we have to, okay? If it means... working out, which I think that we would do if we were doing that work up at Orokonui when we sit down and do our priorities. Some things are more priority than others. Then I think the water is hugely in there. In sits there a bit of climate change work as well, because I see them as contiguous. Okay.
Oh, thanks, Gretchen. Just again, for new councillors, we do something called environmental monitoring, and we do a report every year.
That's right.
And I remember this time last year, Gary, you'll remember it because you were in the room as well, we had the environmental reports about that big, and it ended up being dumped on our table, as Gretchen will know too, and we didn't do anything with it. It was a collection of data.
Right.
I've just had that conversation with about out here, about the need for...
better monitoring.
Our environmental monitoring. No, we do it actually, but we don't let it drive policy. So if you're going to have science, you know, let's use it in the way in which we make policy. That's the first thing. Second, just to answer that question as well, Brian, I really do think that one thing we've started to get quite good at, and as a result of changing our policy here around this table, last one, was sharing information with our communities. Particularly science-based information. Manuhira Care has helped us amazingly with the information. We wouldn't have those hydrology reports, Brian, unless that community had got on board with us with the new attitude that we're showing. So I think if we've got all those things working in the right direction, I'm a bit optimistic about the next 3 years, Brian. I think we'll get to the right decision.
Thank you.
Okay. I agree with both of those. Those are great answers, both of them. There's going to be looking towards the future, which is the writing new policy, I suppose, that fits the community today. Really big emphasis on partnership with iwi too in that. But there's now as well, and it just struck me when we went along to Dunedin to the Hutton Theatre and listened to the announcements on water. Really struck me, somebody was saying, you know, we have to act actually now, not wait till 2025, or we're going to have an even bigger gap to get back to. So we've got to be really exactly using the information from our data to prioritise. I've been saying this for a long time. Look at what are our priority catchments and then start tracing what are the issues in those and actually solving them. Yeah, immediately. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Councillor Wilson.
No, I'm happy in that context. I had some questions, but I'll ask them of people later in a different setting.
Thank you. All right, so now we'll move to movers and seconders speaking in support of their nominations, and we'll just go in the same order we have. So, Councillor Deke, you would be first.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I think it's pretty much all been said. I was taken... The reason I chose to support Councillor Robertson and to nominate her was in that statement she put out by email to all of us on Monday of this week, where she declared her willingness to be our chair, and in the very next sentence she made a commitment to change, commitment to do things better, to achieve more, to govern better, better systems, better teamwork. And that's why I felt fully committed to what she stood for. It wasn't going to be same old, same old. There's been a lot of suggestion in the questions that have gone to Councillor Robertson in the last hour and a half or so about her having been the deputy chair and how effective she was in that role. Clearly, she would be in a very different position as our chair. She would have more influence, more opportunity, more authority to do the things she's been telling us today, and including that phrase she used, which I quite like, that is doing the do, not mucking around, actually getting some big scores on the board with deemed permits, with water quality, with air quality, with biodiversity, and actually engaging and working with communities rather than just saying that's what we'll do. Catchment groups in particular, which is clearly one of Councillor Robertson's great passions. Now, that wasn't political rhetoric. It wasn't about change for change's sake. It was a commitment from a person who wants to be our leader and our chair, to listen more, to partner more, to do more, and especially to achieve more. I'll pick up what Councillor Hobbs just said a minute or two ago, and it reinforces what our Chief Executive has said publicly in recent days. This council needs more people. It needs more accommodation. And I include Central Otago in that. I'd like to see us have a better established hub in Central Otago with policy people, with staff leaders based there. I can see that being achieved in the next 3 years, and I'm sure that what Councillor Robertson has been talking about as our chair, that she wants to see that as well. It's not going to be an easy job. It's going to require courage from all of us to make the commitments to spend more money on skilled people. And that will cost more because then we're competing in a relatively shallow New Zealand pool to find those people to come and work for us and for Otago. So all of us will have to display the courage and the commitment that Councillor Robertson shown today. I'm ready to do that, and I'm ready to keep her supported as our new chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Gretchen. To be our chair, you will need to be highly effective, driven, determined, able to relate to all of Otago, whether at the Kaitangata Hall with your red bands on, talking about restoration of Lake Tuakatauro, or up the Cadrona Valley for a catchment meeting, or telling Ekan to take their wallabies back, which we don't want. With councillors, you will need to develop a collective vision and make a difference for all of Otago, a strong leadership and not afraid to change and adapt with change. We need to be accountable, transparent and responsible for all decisions, including research, which will have vital outcomes. I wish you all the best. Councillor Forbes.
Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to be really, really short. Our community wants change and engagement towards radical improvement of our performance. We can't present them with a chair who has had any part in the past failures. Therefore, Marion is the only person among the three who can actually represent our commitment to change. Thank you.
And Councillor Wilson.
I think I got elected for change. And what that change looks like has to be a very, very different system than what has operated in the past, and it has to be seen from outside by those everywhere in Otago as change. There is only one option for me in ensuring that that is the message that goes out around here, and that we're going to have a change in style and someone who's got a proven record of working collectively around a number of very different sort of groups. And I've had the pleasure in very recent times, having only met Marion a few months ago, to work on a very eclectic bunch of people and seen her do that. And and that's been a joy to see. And I'm very, very happy to say that she's someone who can break down barriers with anyone, even the bluest of us, and make things happen. And that's why I think we have to be seen to be making that change that Marion will bring.
Thank you.
A point of order. I wish to withdraw my nomination in favour of Marion Hobbs. So I wish to withdraw.
Thank you. All right. We will proceed then with an opportunity for further remarks. If you could limit them to 5 minutes each, if there is any need for those remarks. So how about we just pop round the table. Councillor Calvert, anything you would... Councillor Deaker? Forbes? Hobbs? Anything you'd like to say? Councillor Hope? Gallagher? Laws? Malcolm? No? Robertson? No? Scott? Wilson? All right. Okay, we are at the point then where we will put those two remaining nominations to a vote.
Can I ask for a division?
Yeah. Yes. Well, kind of naturally falls that way in some ways. Okay, all right. So can I ask all those in favour of Councillor Robertson to show their hands now? And all those in favour of Councillor Hobbs to show their hands now. All right. Okay. As we only have two councillors who have been nominated and voted on for chairperson, we have a chairperson. The majority is for Councillor Hobbs.
Thank you, people. Thank you very much. I'm nervous as hell now.
Hail the new queen.
I promise I'll forget all your names.
You better.
Gretchen, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a lovely, honest discussion. It's been a fabulous discussion that just happened, Michael. Same thing. I hope we keep it up. We will. Thank you.
All right. Would you like to come and take your chair?
Oh, bloody hell. You've got to do the deputy bit, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do. Don't I?
You?
Yeah. No, you have to do it.
I have to do it.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, let's
go.
That's all right. We have some notes for you. No, I'm going to give you your seat. And we will... We have some notes for you. You may want to choose to have a quick adjournment so we can have a look at things. But
I'm doing it without paper.
Hold on, Mary.
want to leave.
Right, yeah. Sweethearts.
Do you want to be your worship?
No, you for God's sake, my name's Marion.
Cool.
Thank you.
Sorry, people.
Thank you.
Good. The worship, Marion.
If you really wanted a title, it's honourable, and I'm
that's
not
right.
having that.
You still like, yes, you've got the on, haven't you?
Yes, no, yeah. I'm not having that, thank you. No way. What am I doing?
So, the darling, can I nominate?
For election?
Okay. Right. I'm calling for nominations for a deputy chairperson, please.
I'd
Hillary?
Like to nominate Councillor Laws.
Councillor Laws. Do I need a seconder before I move forward? Yes. May I have a seconder? Councillor Laws. Kate Wilson. Can I call for further nominations? I saw your hand up, Michael. Yep.
Councillor Noon, I'd like to nominate.
Councillor Noon, can I have a seconder for Councillor Noon? Gretchen? Phew, I did it. Remember names. Okay, are there any further nominations? Yes, darling. Come.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Robinson there.
Councillor?
I'm thinking, and I always think about what's best for the council, and I actually think two from Dunedin is probably not ideal for the council. So I'm not, yeah.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you, dear. Any further nominations? There being no further nominations, can we go to... Do you want to talk, or do you just want to go for a vote, people?
A vote.
I think we're talked out. Let's go for a vote. All those who wish to vote, and we're going to do the same, what did you call it, a deliberative?
Division.
Division. Yes, division. A division. All those who would like to vote for, who was the first person nominated?
Councillor Laws.
Councillor Laws. Please raise a hand. Six. Right. Is that six?
No, that's right.
That's five.
That's put six. Your hands up again, please. Sorry.
Hillary?
Order.
Yes, that's six.
Three, four, five, six.
You need to vote.
And I need to vote. Seven. All those, and you don't, there's no against, and all those for the other councillor, which was? Councillor Noon? One. So it's one, two, three, four, five. Can you see the people?
One, I'm sorry, can we see that again, please?
So it's
Carmen O'Brien's got it, thank you.
Yep.
So it's 7-5.
So therefore I declare Councillor Laws voted in as Deputy Chairperson.
Thank you.
And
now we are up to the schedule.
Darlings, do you think we could take a break?
Yes,
yeah.
Good idea.
Great idea.
Could we make sure that if there's the photo thing happening, it happens while Kate's here?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's apparently not till three. I'm going to be photoshopped in. Can only get in.
Oh, are you? That's still lucky. Can I do that too?
We might need to improve it, though.
Trotsky had things like that too.
It's wonderful what they can do with photoshopping.
It'll all look wonderful.
Do you want to break people or do we want to go on? I just need to get my breath.
Waiting. It's nice if we carry on.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, let's go on. So the next one is it's a question on the agenda of the draft schedule of council and committee meetings has been prepared and submitted to the council for consideration. Can I, from the chair, ask you Sarah, it is possible for us to adopt these today, but we may change them. Is that possible?
Yes.
They can be amended.
Yes, they can be.
Because, and I'm just saying this because of listening to the conversation around the table, I think I've heard a lot of people talking about different systems, and we need space to do that. Kate, I'm hearing you, and then Hillary.
I had indicated, sorry, I should put my hand up quicker, after the last motion, whether we needed a subsequential motion to ask staff to come back on the 13th of November with a different structure than we've been offered to date, which would be portfolio and project leads along with catchment area leads. And how those appointments are actually made and what topics are chosen would come after our strategic planning day by us, but how that would look functionally I think needs some input from staff, and I'm wondering if it needs to be asked formally or whether that can just happen regardless. It's up to how you prefer it as chair to get those. I think it's something that we've all said we around the table we want, and I'd like to indicate that that is an expectation from staff.
Hilary, is that a different topic you want to raise, or is it the
same
one?
I was just going to say I understand we can adopt that meeting schedule and change it later.
Yes.
And we can adopt it now knowing that we aren't sure, but it's a start.
Yes. Is that right? But at the same time, ask, yes. Can I amend that to sort of, not amend it, the motion, but take on board the thing that we might be actually asking staff to go away?
Yes, that's fine.
To have a look at some other ways of doing things.
So, and an alternative to those that I think we've received some light touches on, I had sent through an email, yes. And I'm not sure if it's Liz can do something magical with it that yes. everyone can share it. I couldn't share it with everyone, sorry.
So you would like me to read
Thank
it
you.
Out? Kate has made a motion that staff prepare a report for the 13th November meeting on alternative governance structure of portfolio or project leads and catchment leads. Noting that what those leads may be will be decided by council after the strategic planning day on the 12th, along with timeframes and delegations.
Okay, I suggest this way forward. I suggest that we adopt pro forma the schedule of meetings,
yeah, okay.
And then take your motion, which I've just foreshadowed afterwards.
Okay, that's okay. Fine.
So could somebody move that we... What was the movement? Movement? That we adopt the meeting schedule. I'm just going to get it. This thing is going to drive me mad. That the council adopts the attached draft schedule of council and committee meetings to December 2020. You going to move that, Hilary?
Yes, and Kate's going to
second. No, I've got a question, sorry.
Okay, I need a seconder.
I'll second, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Yes, Kate.
Again, the question and the one heading that isn't there is where the meetings are held, and I have the expectation or the hope, and it's a question again of staff, where those meetings are, that they're not necessarily all going to be in Dunedin, and in fact spread possibly more so than in the past, and that may be again something out on strategic planning days.
Yes, please, Deb.
So what I can tell you, Councillor Wilson, is we generally try to have at least one meeting in each district throughout the triennium, and we can do better than that,
yes,
if
yes,
that's
yes,
what you would
yeah,
like.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not... It's not an issue for us to do that. We're quite prepared and have the mechanisms that we need to do that.
Fabulous. Well, I'll leave it for that.
Okay. That motion has been moved and seconded. All those in favour of adopting the attached draft schedule, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carried. Can we now take the aforementioned one
yes.
from... Could you read it again, please? Yes. Liz?
Motion that staff prepare a report for the 13th of November meeting on alternative governance structure of portfolio or project leads and catchment leads. Note that what those leads may be will be decided by council after the strategic planning day on the 12th, along with timeframes and delegations. And that was moved by Councillor Wilson.
Can I have a seconder, please? Thanks, Cohen. Any discussion? Yes.
Yeah, so that's... Well, how many weeks away is that? I mean, can we progress it before then? Do we have to, or is that an appropriate... Maybe that's a question to the CE or to the chair. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously the key
meeting,
issue, next issue.
Next meeting. Yes.
Okay, so we're meeting tomorrow, then we're meeting next week
yeah.
on Wednesday and Thursday, and then that's the meeting afterwards, after that.
The week after that.
2 weeks.
We've got things to do in the...
I think,
plans for next week.
But I would like to think that, you know, councillors put on their thinking caps and that we're not just waiting for the staff report,
okay. Okay. Can I suggest something, Brian? Can I suggest that... What is the date that you mentioned?
13th of November.
Okay. That we would expect us and council... to circulate papers a good 7 days in advance of that so that we're discussing and talking about it
yeah.
Before we get into the 13th. Is that fair enough?
That sounds great.
That begins to move it along?
Mm. Yeah.
Is that reasonable?
Yep. Cool. Is that all right?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. So, therefore, Kate's... was yours seconded?
Yes, it was.
Thank you, Carmen.
Thank you, Carmen.
God, my memory. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carries.
Darlings, that's the part... Oh, God save us. She has... That was the schedule. The next thing on our agenda is key legislation update.
Oh, I'm sure a cup of tea would be appropriate.
Now, that's only for
noting. Yeah, but there's been a lot happening.
Just hold a minute, people. It is now 5 to 1. For the first time I can see the clock. It's 5 to 1. Do people... Families by this day may well need to sort of take off. And do you want us to have a break to say goodbye to people that you love and care for? We're going to, no, I don't think we'll have a break. We're not going to have a break, are we? Are you about to leave?
No, I'm going to do whatever I'm told for this.
35 minutes. I'm going to put that in writing.
I think 35 minutes, not 3 years.
Okay, I wonder if we could begin this, and I think I've got most of us around the table, well, almost, we're just taking a break, by you introducing the two lovely people who are going to talk to us about legislative requirements.
Certainly. All right. Can I introduce... were you going to come up as well, Peter? Did you want to... So, if I could just introduce to you, this is Mr. Beverly, from Buttle Finlay in Wellington, and our in-house lawyer, Mr. Peter Callagher, who are going to talk to you about your statutory obligations and requirements this afternoon.
Excuse me, darling, I just went to get a piece of paper because I leapt to there so fast.
Yes, yeah, that's all right. I wanted them, I should bring it over for
that's
you.
That's all right. I
need to get a pen. Can you sign and read her declaration for chairperson?
Oh, thank you, Peter. Sorry. Dear legal people down there at the back of, at the bottom of the room, just before you do, I'm going to have to do something very legal.
Oh! Absolutely.
Sorry, darling. And I have to make my declaration again. So I, Marion Hobbs, declare that I will faithfully and impartially and according to the best of my skill and judgment execute and perform in the best interests of the Otago region the powers, authorities and duties vested in or imposed upon me as chairperson of the Otago Regional Council by virtue of the Local Government Act 2002, the Local Government Official Information and Meetings Act 1987, or any other act. Right, I now sign it.
Yes.
Can I tell you I'm very worried about the things that are imposed upon me?
Yes.
Never mind.
Do I need something to write
my name?
I don't believe so.
Oh,
tell me.
There's one even done for you.
Yes, it's the lawyer.
No, it says
I see. Yeah. I'd buy me now.
I thought we were going to line you in, but
yeah, that's right.
Yep, straight ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks, darling. Now, do you?
Thank you. I need to get you some.
Lovely people from Buttle and Finlay and locally. Would you like to take us through the issues about legislation? So at the first council meeting following an election, there's a certain legislation that must be brought to the attention of councillors in accordance with the Schedule 7 of the Local Government Act, and that is what you are doing for us right now. We're being compliant and good. It's all yours.
Thank you. Tēnā koe, Madam Chair, and tēnā koutou, councillors. As the Chief Executive said, I'm Paul Beverley from Buttle Finlay, and as you'll know, Peter Callagher from the in-house legal team at the Regional Council. I just might check something, Sarah, with you. So there was a proposal for a workshop later, but do you think we conflate those two things into this session?
I think it would be fantastic if you could, please.
Yes, so we don't need to do this for too long, but happy to be directed by the Chair in terms of that. But so as the Chair's pointed out, interestingly, the Local Government Act does require councillors to be... Or councillors to be spoken to about certain pieces of legislation at the first meeting. So there's a paper that is before you, and this year the approach that's been taken is to actually produce a short paper which sets out the key legislation, and so I don't need to talk through that in detail, but I'll just go through the highlights of it and then very happy to take any questions. The pieces of legislation that do need to be brought to the councillor's attention are the Lagoima Act, the Local Government Official Information and Meetings Act, the Local Authorities Members Interests Act, a couple of provisions of the Crimes Act, the Secret Commissions Act, and the Financial Markets Conduct Act. In this paper, we've put in a few other pieces of legislation as well. So I'll just take you through each of those in the body of the paper. So really, attachment A. The yes, please, Madam Chair.
As we go through the piece of legislation, if there were questions from councillors to that piece of legislation, that would be you'd be happy with that. If
absolutely.
We interrupted you.
Yes, as you please. Whatever works best for the councillors.
Is that right, people? Okay.
I should, as with all... Oh.
Is there anything on the screen we can
have? I've just got this paper that's in the...
Oh, yeah, we've got this
online.
Page 11, Brian.
As with all good legal papers, there's a legal disclaimer in it. And it goes without saying this, that you shouldn't rely on this as legal advice for any particular situation you're dealing with.
Oh, good Lord.
And I'll just read out our insurance policy.
It wasn't
no. some of the issues we'll talk about, particularly around conflict of interest, are very fact specific. And so, to the extent you come across a potential conflict or a potential scenario, it is quite important to test that carefully against the legislation, and that will become obvious as we talk through it. So, the Local Government Act, as councillors commented on before, had the purpose of the Act has been played with a bit over time, but we're back to the position now where the Act is to enable democratic local decision-making and action by and behalf of communities and to promote the four well-being, social, economic, environmental and cultural well-being of communities now and in the future. And so that's really the core reason for being. And there are some quite important principles in the Local Government Act, which are set out in Section 14, and those are on that front page. I won't labour through this whole paper, but I think it is worth just pointing to those principles because they are really the guiding markers for how local authorities are meant to operate. So acting in an open, transparent and democratically accountable manner, acting in an efficient and effective manner to deliver on its priorities, making itself aware of the views of all its communities, and decision-making taking into account the diverse views of communities and the current and future interests of communities, as well as the impact on the four well-beings, providing an opportunity for Māori to contribute to the council's decision-making processes, seeking to cooperate and collaborate with other councils, acting prudently in commercial transactions, ensuring prudent stewardship and efficient and effective use of resources, including through planning, and taking a sustainable development approach, taking into account the four well-beings, the need to maintain and enhance the quality of the environment, and the reasonably foreseeable needs of future generations. And it goes without saying, and I do have this at the end of this paper, the Resource Management Act is one of the key acts that this council operates under, and you can see quite a bit of crossover. They're not exactly the same, the purposes of those acts, but some of those sentiments that are set out in the principles of the Local Government Act are also reflected in the purpose and principles of the RMA, although worded slightly differently at times. There's also a note there that when the council exercises its powers, it shouldn't do that for the benefit of a single district. It needs to exercise its powers principally for the benefit of all or a significant part of the region. So that's just a provision in the Act. It's important to for councillors to be aware of their personal liability under the Local Government Act. And, I would recommend that councillors do become familiar with this, because it's of quite a bit of personal importance, obviously. But councillors are indemnified by the council under the Local Government Act for civil liability if they're acting in good faith in pursuance of the council's responsibilities or powers, and any costs from defending any successful criminal action relating to acts or omissions in that capacity as a council. And you hope you can't see too much of that, but we have in recent times seen some of those actions undertaken, and so... there are important provisions. There is the ability for the Auditor General to take action, and in relation to certain losses that the council sustains, and those are just over the page where the council unlawfully spends council money, unlawfully sells or disposes of an asset, unlawfully incurs a liability, or intentionally or negligently fails to recover a debt. And if that's the case, the proceedings can be taken to recover that person from council. So without getting into the detail of all of this, I think obviously the key message is for councillors to have confidence every day that they are acting within the four walls of their responsibilities and powers under the Act. And, you know, there's a highly competent management team here that, you know, should help guide councillors through that. So, and people like Peter are here to make sure that as councillors are doing their work and making their decisions, they're doing so within the law.
Hilary?
Just checking, when they use the word council in here, does it mean two things? One, the things that are done by Sarah and her staff and the decisions made by councillors? Or what does it mean, the word council?
In this particular section on liability, councillor? Or?
Yes, and the loss must arise because the council unlawfully spends people's money.
That's elected members.
So,
yes.
So that's
individually.
Yeah, so that's the governance arm of the council doing this thing.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you. Paul.
Thank you. I'll just keep moving on to the next act.
Absolutely.
The Local Government Official Information and Meetings Act will be familiar to I should say I apologise to those councillors who have been councillors for some time. This will be second nature to you. For some of the new councillors, you may not have seen this so recently.
Through the chair, my question is always, just in terms of normal debate, is it possible that a councillor could take umbrage upon what another councillor says and actually sue on some basis? Can that happen at this table?
So there's a privilege that attaches to the conversation. Sorry, yeah. Madam Chair, if I could take all comments as being through you, is it?
It's all right. Yeah. Just relax.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. There's a privilege that attaches to the conversations at this table, although I do deal with this a bit later on. There is a... if it can be proved that, and particularly for people outside of this room as well, prove that you intentionally intended to defame someone, you were acting through ill will, or otherwise took unfair advantage of this room, then you can open yourself up to liability.
Okay,
so.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
can I check, Paul, therefore? So when we were in the House, Parliament, we could say the most atrocious things, but we were covered by doing it in the House. So that can't happen here.
Well, it's a slightly modified form of privilege in that there are some exceptions if it can be proven that the statements were made motivated by ill will.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Now, this is open to councillors to be reasonably direct and clear in their views. That's why you are elected. But if it can be proven that you went beyond what would be expected of a professionally acting councillor and you were motivated by ill will, then you can open yourself up.
That's right. Plenty of those things have happened in the House, and they have got away with them.
Yes.
We won't have that here. Mind you, there'll be brilliant cheering, so people will behave absolutely superbly.
That's right.
It was an instruction.
Watch the chair.
And there is also the code of conduct, just to remind you, be drawn upon.
Other things around. Yes. So, okay,
the Local Government Official Information and Meetings Act, there's been some discussion around this just not that long ago, actually. So there's two key aspects, the principle of availability. So this is the local government version of the Official Information Act, and the principle that, or the presumption that information should be made available. There are exceptions to that, and one of the key exceptions, if something's likely to prejudice the maintenance of law or endanger the safety of any person, then that information is to be withheld. There's also a number of the reasons that the council may withhold information, and those are listed there, including the protection of privacy, trade secrets, commercial positions, confidential information, avoiding serious offence to tikanga Māori, or the disclosure of the location of wahi tapu, and a range of other matters, including public health and safety, legal professional privilege. So quite often when your lawyers come and speak to you, you'll go into closed session because that is and material that lawyers provide to you is legally privileged. So that advice is withheld under that Act for obvious reasons.
Just go a bit more slowly for us there.
Mm.
So you're coming in and you're providing, let me just think of a situation. I can't think of one at the moment, but it's maybe something to do with water.
Yes.
And you're coming in to talk about, Manuhirakia has lots of wells, doesn't it? I don't know, no. But I was thinking of Marlborough, Awatere Valley, lots of wells, and the ownership of the water from those wells and how it's shared and things like that. You're giving us advice. We'd like it to be transparent.
Yes.
And we can't have it transparent?
No, Madam Chair, so you can.
You can waive privilege, exactly.
Yeah, as Councillor Laws says, you can choose to do that. I mean, the situation I quite often am involved in is if there is involved in litigation for a council, and we are talking about litigation strategy, and I'm updating the councillors in advance of heading to court. Sometimes the councillors will say, because if that information is public, that will disadvantage a council in its proceedings, so we have those in closed sessions.
Okay.
Other times you may say, Madam Chair, like this session, this is an open session, look, we just want to hear from you about some of the legal aspects of this and tell us what the position is. So,
thank you.
But as Councillor Laws says, that's a matter, the privilege is owned by the council, so it's up to you to decide whether you
thank
waive
you.
It.
Okay, people, I'm going to go.
So, So that's the first part of Lagoima, protecting official information, making official information open, but protecting it where it needs to be protected. And I was mindful of the comments made about transparency, and this is a very obviously important principle in local government and clearly important principle to this council. So, another example that I quite often come across is commercial or confidential negotiations. And sometimes negotiations are expressly held in confidence, and sometimes in the Māori area particularly, and those are often... So if there's a confidential negotiation, then that information may be withheld to allow the negotiation to be completed. Second part of it is council meetings, and the presumption is that council meetings are held in open with access for the public and for the news media. That does not apply where there are no resolutions or decisions to be made, and that's, I think, the comments were made earlier about workshops. So it is open to the council to have workshops which are not open to the public. The decision about what's an open meeting and what's a workshop is for the council to make. There are provisions in the Act for excluding the public, as I said, and there's a procedure to go through there. There's also provisions in the Act about making agendas, reports, and minutes publicly available. So again, the whole principle of the Act is that the material upon which decisions are made is publicly available. And as I said, defamatory matters and agendas or minutes are privileged unless the plaintiff can prove they were predominantly motivated by ill will towards a plaintiff or otherwise undue advantage was taken. So that's... And look, Peter... on a daily basis works with Lagoima, and it's far from straight, and as you, many of you will be aware from your previous roles, the OIA has a similar character to it and can cause, it can be a lot of work, the council teams. Peter, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, it's always a difficult one too, because it's never black and white. Involves balancing the public interest, whether information is going to be withheld or disclosed. So it often comes down to a judgment, and there are often different views on the judgment itself. But in every instance, and from responding to a Lagoima request, and when we've had to exercise that judgment and say we're withholding X, Y, or Z, say from a request, we're required to let that person know that they've got the right to complain to the Ombudsman. So there's a mechanism for, I guess, that matter to be reviewed.
I take it that... things can shift in and out of these categories. I mean, what I'm thinking of, for example, is that in some cases there would be a commercial negotiation or something, and while you're talking about it, like we want a new building and however many times we've had a go, while the negotiation's happening. But once that negotiation has concluded, that becomes Lagoimable, is it?
Yeah, well, with the passage of time, depending on the scenario, yes, it could be open.
It's done, and later people can know things about it that during the time it would prejudice things. Is that so they could ask again, or you could say, at the moment it's under negotiation, feel free to
or not.
Yes, they're more than welcome to take requests, and the passage of time is a reason for reconsidering it. We do receive a fresh request, and there have been times where, given that passage, that we've disclosed information that's previously been withheld.
Okay. Sorry, any other...
The lovely one about...
Members' interest. So this is probably my comments earlier about having to think about an individual fact situation quite carefully really apply, particularly under this Act, because there are some general comments in this paper, but as you read through the case law and the commentary, there are some situations that seem quite similar that fall on either side of the line, but I'll give a couple of examples about that. So, firstly, there are really three aspects there's two aspects to this Act, and there's a third aspect I want to speak about. The first one is disqualifying contracts, and all of this falls under the overarching head of bias, and what the legislation's talking about is making sure that as councillors sit at this table, they make their decisions for the right reason. And they act with integrity, and they cannot be criticised for potentially having been motivated by other reasons. That's what it's all about.
Okay, stop right there. So, yes. Because also it comes about perception.
I completely agree, yes.
So I'm the chair of Accreditor Free Dunedin, and yes. I know that we come and ask the ORC for money. Mm-hmm. I will have to step aside, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, Madam Chair, you'll have to think about that very carefully. Yeah,
it's greater than a member of the public.
Yes.
Because I think it's a really good that you've raised that. We've all got, I sit on the Guardians of Blake Dunstan, and I mean, there's a number of us have all got associations in the community. I wasn't very happy with your answer. And I'll explain why, because I think we need a bit more clarity than that when we declare an interest.
Yes.
My understanding is, now, if you're going to tell me, well, Michael, you may look for all the clarity you look for, but the problem's the legislation, I'll accept that. But my understanding is that it's for me or Michael or Gary or Marion to declare the interest.
Yes.
It's not for anybody else to judge whether you have. Is that correct or not?
You said the decision is one for you. There are some things which automatically disqualify councillors from participating. A good example is the contracts. So entering into contracts with the council which have an annual value of over $25,000, including GST, so that's an automatic disqualification. And councillor Laws, there are... I'm a bit obtuse in my answer, but the reason is that the fact, for example, that someone is a chair of an organisation that interacts with the council does not automatically need to disqualify. You need to examine the circumstances in a bit more detail, and goes back to your point, Madam Chair, about, as the Auditor General has said, what would a reasonable member of the community standing back from this looking at it think? Yep. And it may well be, there's a number of cases where someone has had a role in an organisation that interacts with the council where the courts have said, well, that, you know, we think they could continue to carry their role out on the council, even though they have declared that they have this other role. I'm not blaming it on the Act, but the Act doesn't have clear-cut categories about what's in and what's out. So what I'm really saying is it's a matter that needs to be worked through on a case-by-case basis.
Yes,
I would have thought, if you had any concern at all, you would withdraw from the table, leave the room, and that would be the appropriate thing in many cases. Can I also make the point, just following on from what Michael said, it's up to the individual. Well, it's actually also the chair has an involvement in this as well, because if the chair lets a situation evolve that clearly has a conflict, it may prejudice the outcome of that, it might be a council resolution, or it might be a consent or whatever. And if the chair lets that go, you just wait.
Be a lack of faith in the community and what
not just the community, but legally, it can be for challenge.
Yes, and no, look, I completely agree with that, councillor. So in one of the other categories, if we talk about the category of non-pecuniary interests, so we'd step away from money for a moment and say there are plenty of examples of where councillors have come out into the media and said, hey, we've got real concerns about this proposal. And then it comes to the council table and there's a question about whether the councillor can continue to participate in that discussion. Now, what the courts have said is, you know, you are elected members. You are actually entitled to have a view, and you're entitled to come from a perspective. What is important is there's going to be a line you approach where if you've crossed over that line, and I'll give you an example in the moment of that, you should not have participated in the discussion. I do agree with your comment, Councillor, it's a discussion with the Chair and the Chief Executive, because it can be a matter you can take to both and say, and I support the view that you should be open, cautious and conservative in this area. You should, if you've got any doubt at all, my recommendation to you would be to disclose, to speak about it, to check in with others, because others will have an informed view about it as well. But look, there was an example where a person, I think it was a councillor or a member of a licensing board, said, if I vote for this proposal, I will be a traitor. And the court said, well, you know, you clearly were going into that discussion with a closed mind. In other cases, people have said, I've got real concerns about this issue, but the court said, but that councillor did come to the table with an open mind. You know, an open mind, you know, with the potential to change it. Didn't mean they have to change their mind. What that goes to is the validity of the council's decision. And, councillor, you make the very good point that if you get that wrong, the consequences is that the decision of the council can be invalidated. So someone can take judicial review of the council's decision and say, Councillor X clearly had predetermined their view on this and should not have participated in this discussion debate. So that affects the council's decision. There are other issues, and I'll just talk about pecuniary interests for a moment, which affect, which actually have quite severe consequences for the individual councillor. So if an individual councillor participates in a decision in which they have a pecuniary interest, and while the Act doesn't define it, essentially it means where you stand to either gain or lose money, then that you can actually be you can be proceeded against by the Auditor General and basically struck off as a councillor. So a couple of examples of that, there was an example where there was a long median strip and there was a proposal on the table to put a gap in it so cars could turn and get into the shopping centre. And the mayor owned the old coin laundry service in the shopping centre and participated pretty enthusiastically in that debate. And that was found to be a pecuniary interest that he shouldn't have participated in. In other cases, again, it's a fine line and quite fact-specific. There will be cases where someone will disclose, look, I do have this interest, but there will be some comfort that's not an interest that should disqualify you. But again, I just urge, I would urge caution and conservatism in that area. And there will be, the Auditor General has recognised that members of local authorities are, by virtue of the fact they're elected, they are going to come from areas, they're going to have interests in particular areas and particular sectors, so you can't come here completely devoid of any association.
Can I take you back to the point Marion made as chair, that she's also chair of Predator Freedom Eden, and they have a financial relationship with us. We've given them buckets of money.
And she's not enough.
They're going to change all that, Marion.
Just declared. And they're going to want more. So what Marion doesn't benefit personally in any pecuniary sense from that, do you?
No,
she's just shown that she's got a closed mind because she said you haven't given her enough.
So what does she do? When Predator Freedom Eden fronts up to us and says, thank you very much, you gave us X, we want X plus Y, where's Marion? Is she out the door somewhere?
Can I complicate that question slightly more? Because I also have to declare that I'm a trustee on Predator Free. Predator Free does no work in my area. They do work in
Marion's area.
Yeah.
So whether that actually makes us slightly different, but the same.
Yeah. Anyway, what does Marion do or what does Kate do?
When I started law in Dunedin many years ago, the lecturer walked in on the first day and said, I can tell you the answer to every legal question, and it depends.
Yeah. And was it Ian Jameson?
It was. what I was going to say is that actually just there's an interesting issue that the Chair, you may want to consider about contracting, if Predator Free is contracting with the council, you have a role as the chair of that.
On the south side of the Waitaki.
You may want to look into that. because there is a prohibition on not only if you're personally contracting, but if you're a managing director or in a management position in an entity that is contracting with the council, there's a bar on that if it's more than $25,000 a year.
Yep.
So I just recommend you look at that.
Yep.
Beyond that, and to answer your question, councillor, it would come down to an analysis of to what extent, let's assume there's no pecuniary interest, to what extent may it be appropriate for the chair to abstain and leave the table if that discussion's going on. And you know, again, that's a...
You judge that?
You do. It's a matter of judgment and seeking good advice. Yeah. Sarah, Chief Executive, is that accord with your...
Yes, absolutely. I think, it's worthwhile, at the very least, having a conversation, even if you remotely think that you might have an issue. And I would hope that that's the kind of culture we could have, where we actually just raise those things and have a conversation about them so we can manage them appropriately. For your safety, as much as for anyone's safety, actually, because, you know, it's your integrity that gets called into question.
Yep. Did I have it?
You got a couple of Alexa, questions.
Sorry, dear. And then Graham. Excuse me, just before we go, thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Apologies.
Oh, have a fabulous
Facebook
break.
On your bike.
You're from your big venture.
Kate's going away biking for some time.
Send the photos and we'll pop them at the table.
Bye-bye, Kate.
Be safe.
I've forgotten my question now. It'll come back. You go first, Brian.
Perfect.
I think I remember mine. But it goes back to the chair CE thing. You know, in terms of this predator threat, do you really want the people in the street saying... The only reason that Predator Free get $1 million is because that bloomin' Marion Hobbs and her cohorts manipulated that outcome. Do you as an organisation, ideally we say, look, we actually stand for the utmost in integrity and transparency.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't you? That's why we have 12 councillors. Why wouldn't you leave the room?
That's why I brought it up, Lon, because that's why I actually believe very strongly in. There are some other ones I've got that don't cause that much trouble.
Yeah.
Alexa?
So that's a big... also, a lot of this is around perception, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So there's that side, but there's also the perception that is hard to argue with, that the right way to go is to have a predator-free area, and there's many people out there that expect Marion, as the chair of predator-free, to be standing up for that, since it fits with all the other relevant frameworks. How's that working?
Yes.
That perception thing.
That's okay, but when I'm asking for money, it's a different matter.
When you're asking for money.
Exactly. She can make her case, and then when it comes to the vote, she can leave.
Is that what...
Yes, well, again, I'd urge you take some good advice on that. What I would say, that the point's a very good one about perception, because, and the chair made it before as well, so bias or predetermination is not only about actual... So you know, we've seen this in the Supreme Court. Not only about actual bias, it's about the perception of bias. Yes. And that's it. That is, you can be equally on the wrong side of the line for... it goes back to what would the ordinary person in the community think if they stood back from this and looked at it. And just to give you another example, just in terms of that leaving the room, there was an example where some people fell foul of the line where they participated in a discussion about how to set remuneration, but so they developed all these principles. They said, but when we talk about me, I'll go out. And the court said, well, that's not good enough, because the way you set the principles was pretty clearly going to apply to you. I just reiterate, it's a bit of a tricky area. But the most important thing is councillors are aware of it, alive to it. And again, a council that's working really well will have an environment where someone can say, sorry, what about your relationship there? How are we going to...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as I say, it can have consequences both on the personal side for councillors if they get it wrong, or it can invalidate decisions of the council.
So Brian raised that point before about that in a sense in the chair, as I get to know people, and if I think, oh my God, we're dealing with something and you live in that area and maybe you've got something, and I ask, okay, and it's out there, and so we have complete transparency.
Because we've got three of us who live at OPO with the buses. Now,
well, that's it.
So
like yours, that's
we'll want
it.
Them more often.
Yes. Hang on. Yes.
Madam Chair, I have a slightly different view. I think it's up to the individual, and we've heard that already. And I think that you've got an agenda where it highlights, do you need to raise any conflicts of interest at the front end? I don't think the chair should have to be worrying about the rest of the team. Mm. And my other piece of advice was, the best advice I ever got was, if you're an elected member, your most, I suppose, important attribute is integrity. Mm. And if you want to put that on the line, whether it's perception or whatever, I mean, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. Yeah. So I think, if in doubt, get out.
Yeah. Okay.
Simple as that.
Thanks,
but I don't think you should have a greater responsibility than any other individual around the table. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so just a couple more acts to touch on briefly. One is the Crimes Act, and won't dwell on this, but it's pretty clear that you know, accepting or soliciting a bribe is a criminal offence, and that applies to councillors. So that's to encourage someone to do or fail to do anything in their official capacity, or to use or disclose information gained in your position as a councillor for pecuniary or other unfair advantage. So, look, I won't dwell on that, but I think councillors are well experienced in the government realm will understand that. The other one is the Secret Commissions Act, which is not talked about.
1910.
Pardon me? Yes.
1910.
Yes, it's a principle that's endured. Is that you cannot give or offer to give a gift or other consideration to like a councillor, or you cannot accept or receive that sort of gift or consideration as an inducement or reward for doing some act or showing some favour or disfavour to a person in relation to the council's business.
Okay, I'm just taking back all those bottles of whiskey that appeared before.
Sorry. Yes, yeah. So I think, look, that's pretty obvious, I'm assuming, as well. But the secret commissions are a bit, they're a bit more subtle than the bribe. They can be, look, we a good example is like I'm an earthworks business and I'm doing some work in your area. Hey, I'll come and grade your road for you. Just remember that vote's on Thursday about the, you know, whatever. Yeah. So I mean it's that more indirect benefit, but councillors will be very attuned to that. And it's a perception thing as well.
Asphalting always finishes at the end of the council's right. Isn't that a rule?
It's in the Act as well, yes. That's an exception. No.
We're calling it the Shane Jones Act now.
I certainly won't be commenting on that. It's something that people have been caught out with over time. Is just, again, some of those secret commissions can be quite subtle. So, I think it goes back to what the councillor said before. The whole thing's based on integrity and having a good eye out for these sorts of things. If in doubt, ask questions. Look, the three final acts on there, the Financial Market Conduct Act has to be drawn to the attention of the councillors. I mean, councillor, if you are producing investment statements and other public documents around investment, those statements have to be correct, and there's a pretty high standard applied to that. So if you are doing that, you will be getting good professional accounting advice on how to do that and legal advice. So the Protected Disclosures Act is just worth drawing to people's attention, and that is an act that protects employees who disclose information about serious wrongdoing. So it's a whistleblowing legislation, and it's worth being that is something that is protected and provided for in the law. And finally, the Health and Safety at Work Act, and everyone's very conscious of health and safety, but this council and these councils have responsibilities under that act to make sure that there are proper systems in place. And that there is, you undertake due diligence to ensure that you comply with the duty of care. Yes. So, and finally, the Resource Management Act, which is really the area I practice in. And you know, I don't need to tell the councillors anything about that. You're doing a lot of work under that act, but it's a pretty dynamic period, as the chair pointed out. The act itself's under review, but also the this council has, you know, significant obligations in relation to its regional policy statement and regional planning documents and resource consent applications, monitoring and enforcement. But you're well aware of that, I think, you know, that the current national policy direction is presenting a lot of challenges and opportunities for councils. And so it's never before been quite as dynamic as it is, I don't think, the RMA world. So everyone's watching the space. So, Madam Chair, we've covered the acts that we have to cover, and there are a couple more in there just for completeness, but happy to take any further questions.
MLA as well?
Of RMA? No.
No, you're not. Then, Paul, I may ring you. I have some. I'll just lay it out, people. I have a real problem at the moment that I need to talk with a lawyer about, which is not a personal problem. It's a question of councillors also being commissioners.
Yes. And I found it quite a difficult issue to look at from the outside, and I need to have a discussion. I was going to annoy Sir Geoffrey, but then I decided my day was too short, and that counts as it. because I needed to really have quite a discussion about that.
Yes. Right? Yeah, yeah. No, it's a very interesting issue and a number of, you know, that's why a number of councils either appoint independent commissioners or appoint a mix of elected members and independent commissioners. But it's about having clarity around role clarity about what the councillor is doing, what role the councillor is performing sitting in that on that hearing commissioner and
okay.
People here have done the making good decisions program. So we have
to talk with somebody.
That.
Somebody can give me the local RMLA person. I will contact them. Yes.
Just a question, Madam Chair. Are you familiar with our RPS?
I have, in part, I'm familiar with it, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, should we be going forward with that and sorting it all out, or should we be pulling back from a legal perspective? Because that's the process that's in as a legal process, yes. Do you have any comment? Yeah. It could be an inappropriate question.
Well, I'm not acting for the council on that. Sarah, I don't know if you'd like to. I mean, I'm happy to.
So on the RPS itself, we have considered sort of what we do, because we're obviously sitting in a difficult situation where we've got a partially operative RPS, we've got appeals, and then we have the judgment of Judge Jackson, which says actually the whole thing doesn't give effect to part two. And he just says that basically in a sentence and one piece of a judgment. So we've got an appeal into the High Court, but we've also not been able to settle appeals on the port, which now looks like it's probably going to go and be determined in a higher court. So we can't really abandon the RPS where it's at. Which is tricky, but in the same breath, we have to replace our RPS because it doesn't comply with the national planning standards. Wow. So we are in a really difficult situation, and we're sort of spending money that, because we've got to pursue what we've got currently, we have to spend money on that, but of course its lifespan is going to be very short because we then have to redo the RPS in a completely different way to the way it is now.
Okay, so I'm not going to actually...
Sorry.
Continue that discussion, because it's quite intense, and I think I need to do... We all need to come up right up to speed. But, Andrew, you had a question.
Thank you. It's probably a question for Paul. If we were of a mind at some stage in the future to review a function of council, and it may be regulatory, we receive legal advice, just so I understand what you said earlier. We receive legal advice. We would have legal privilege over that legal advice if and when we were to release that to the public.
So, Councillor, if you receive legal advice, it comes with legal privilege, and so that's privilege. It's owned by the council, and but you can choose to waive it. But once you waive it and release it to the public, you no longer have privilege over that advice, which just means you don't have the right to keep it confidential. Yeah. But
yes.
But if I were to provide an opinion to this council, then if someone applies to see that, they're not entitled to see it because it's legally privileged until such time as you make a decision to release it.
So it allows us the flexibility to decide when it is released.
Yes.
And providing we have reason.
Yes, exactly. And in most cases, people don't waive privilege. I mean, that's the whole point of getting legal advice, is so you can get some...
one-upmanship.
You can be informed as to what the legal risks and opportunities are. That's not to say that the council can't make a statement publicly about what its view of the legal position is. That's a slightly different thing. You know.
Well, not really, if we're not talking about the legal position. And in some respects, half-heartedly talking about it's worse, isn't it? Because we've got a legal opinion that says something that we're not talking to you about, but we make a decision based on something that the public don't know about, and with a background of something they don't know about, and make comments on it, something they don't know about. And at that stage, if our obligation, something in here, is to be transparent and accountable, unless it's all going to be kept private, for good reason, then being able to talk to half of it is sort of holding somebody's hand behind somebody's back, isn't it?
Oh, no, look, I do see the point. I guess legal advice... legal advice often has a number of scenarios presented in it, which, again, the council will have to make a decision about whether it's happy to flush those scenarios out. But sometimes the council is under quite heavy attack from opponents in litigation, and what you do in legal advice is you work through all the risks, you analyse them, and you give advice on those risks. Now, generally, that's not the sort of stuff you want to release publicly because you're releasing it to your opponents. So, you know, there's a lot of litigation strategy and those sorts of things. So... you know, maybe the council says this is the approach we're taking, and but the actual detailed risk analysis advice in a legal sense is not released. But again, if you want to release it, you can. But generally in litigation, it's not a good idea to give your litigation strategy to the other side.
Yeah. Okay, lovely. Are there any more questions? I hope we see not too much of you.
Thank you.
But I really do appreciate the advice and the clarity of this session. And that is... from now I have the agenda back in front of me. That is that we've just gone through induction workshop number 3 on legal.
Yes.
Correct? And we've done this one in together. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the two of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Peter and Paul. God save. Darlings, I just want to think about this. So we have one more workshop to do, and we have a group photo to take, and we've had lunch. Would you like a break now? It's tea. Yeah.
Yes, please.
I heard that.
Yes,
darling.
Doing other stuff.
We're going to come back into the meeting. Are we to do the induction workshop or not?
It's outside.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, sweeties, can we just call it to order? We are going to. This is the last part of the meeting. Was each council was to have a 5-minute introductory speech on their priorities while on council. Then we were going to have an induction workshop, which is outside the meeting. Two options. We close the meeting now and we still have that 5-minute introductory speech inside the workshop. The other option is we take a break now and we... don't close the meeting, but we keep it open to do the 5-minute speech by including the 5-minute speech thingamajig, not in a workshop, but in a meeting. Any thoughts? Does that sound crazy?
Cup of tea and keep the meeting open.
Cup of tea and then come back and do the 5-minute speech in the meeting? In the meeting? Done. Cup of tea, people. Let us resume in here. Am I looking at that clock and is it saying 1:45?
Yeah, it's saying 10:00.
We'll be back in here at 2:00, people.